Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. We have a busy docket, so let's get right to it. First, why is everything so slow in Idaho in the Daybell-Vallow matters? Second, is there a break in the Delphi murders? Third, all three men charged with the death of Ahmaud Arbery have been indicted by a federal grand jury alleging federal hate crimes. Fourth, the court in the Scott Peterson matter grants additional time for discovery and time to prepare. Fifth, a police shooting in Chicago captured on video. Awful, but lawful. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button as well as the little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. For example, yesterday we went live with the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter. We had it, we were waiting for it, and nothing happened, which is a nice segue into our first matter on the docket. Why is everything so slow in Idaho in the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matters? Well, I guess we could say things were slowed down a little bit because COVID. Okay, I'll grant you that, but the courts didn't stop working. As you may recall, the preliminary hearing was conducted. People wore masks. They put up the little plexiglass shield in front of the witnesses that looked like they work it behind the convenience store at your gas station or 7-Eleven. And everything moved along. The court system did not completely shut down. Now, one can say there's a lot of discovery in this particular case. Granted, there would be, but most of that discovery was already gathered before charges were filed in this particular case. Now there's a delay because of DNA evidence. This is not a complex issue. This issue comes up all the time. I don't know why everyone in Idaho is acting like this is a big deal. You have DNA. It will be consumed in the testing. That is why they call it consumptive testing. All you do is notify the defense that there's going to be consumptive testing. And then the court tells the defense, you have a right to be present if you choose to do so, and your expert can be there for the testing. So get your expert and let's get a date and let's get this case moving along. I do not know why this case is taking so long. They could have used the court hearing yesterday to address the rescheduling of the trial. But the judge conducted most of the hearing in chambers, which in my opinion is ridiculous. The public has a right under the Sixth Amendment as well for public trials. And when you're conducting everything in chambers and then you come out and give a brief summary of what was done, frankly, I think it's offensive to the Constitution. It's offensive to the public. Conduct the hearing in the public courtroom. Don't go back into chambers or a breakout room as we have here today. All right. We'll continue to follow the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter. And maybe in a few years, we will have a trial. At this pace, it could be years. Let's face it. We've already passed the 1 year date from which the children were found. A year. A year is what most jurisdictions allow for a serious criminal case to get to trial. That's it, a year. Granted, it's a homicide case, but it's not really a homicide case, at least not yet. But the reality of it is that this case should have been moving forward much faster than it is right now. Next on the docket, is there a break in the Delphi murders? Yesterday, we brought you a story about, well, a guy that's just, well, give him the presumption of innocence, but let's face it, a little creepy. And if he is convicted or pleads guilty to what he is accused of, he probably deserves to spend the rest of his life in prison. The man that I'm talking to you about is a man by the name of James Brian Chadwell II. Well, he had a young girl who was the next door neighbor in his basement. The police were called when the parents noticed that she had been missing. And when they were doing a neighborhood canvas of the area, one of the neighbors indicated that Mr. Chadwell stated that he had seen the child after her disappearance. When the police arrive at the house, he says, well, I really don't know, but she was here, but she left. Hey, can we search the house? They search the house, and guess what? They find a 9-year-old girl in the basement in a locked room. Mr. Chadwell was obviously arrested and faces some very serious charges. Well, let's recap the Delphi murders. This goes back to February 14th of 2017. Approximately 20 miles from Lafayette, Indiana, where Mr. Chadwell resides, in Delphi, two girls were found murdered near the Monon High Bridge, Libby German, 14, and Abby Williams, 13, and they had taken a hike on the abandoned bridge the previous day. The outing was only meant to last a few hours. The girls took photos while strolling across the bridge, but as time passed and their family didn't hear from them, they became worried and called authorities for assistance. Police found the girls' lifeless bodies a short distance from the bridge. Now, after their deaths, the incident was nicknamed the Snapchat Murders. After Abby took a photo of Libby at around 2:17 p.m. and put it on social media. Detective says that after the photo was taken, a man approached the girls and apparently told them to go down the hill. One of the girls, likely sensing danger, recorded the man's voice on her cell phone. She also managed to take a photo and record a small clip of the suspect. Although his face isn't clear in the picture, it was enough to give authorities a general description. Since then, they've pored through thousands of tips related to this case. And anyone who has information should still contact the Delphi Homicide Investigation Tip Line at 844-459-5786. The police now are investigating Mr. Chadwell, because if you would take a look at the descriptions and the artistic drawings that the police have come up with over the years, one could reasonably conclude that the gentleman in the artist's rendering and the artist's drawing bears some resemblance to Mr. Chadwell. Wouldn't that be great for the family if there was, in fact, actually a break? Now, Mr. Chadwell has been charged with child molestation, attempted child molestation, battery resulting in serious bodily injury, criminal confinement, as well as strangulation. He is being looked at possible sentencing enhancers as a possible habitual offender, and he could add up to at least 20 years in prison, which seems like a very short amount of time, given the fact that there's allegations of child molestation. We'll keep you updated. Next on the docket, all three men charged in state court with the death of Ahmaud Arbery have been indicted by a federal grand jury alleging federal hate crimes. A Southern District of Georgia grand jury handed down the indictment against 35-year-old Travis McMichael, his father, Gregory McMichael, who's 65, and William Roddy Bryan, 51. The new charges stem from threats of force to intimidate and interfere with Arbery's right to use public streets because of his race. Travis and Gregory McMichael are also facing additional charges of using, carrying, and brandishing a firearm. As a quick refresher, Ahmaud Arbery was running on a public street in Satilla Shores neighborhood of Brunswick, Georgia. Travis and Gregory McMichael armed themselves with firearms, got into a truck, and chased Arbery through the public streets of the neighborhood while yelling at him, using their truck to cut off his route and threatening him with firearms. We know this because Mr. William Roddy Bryan recorded it on his phone. And to top that off, his then attorney released it to a radio station, which put it up. and the video is not exculpatory, which means it doesn't say that they're innocent. In fact, it's aggravating because you can see Mr. Arbery literally trying to get away. The video shows McMichaels chasing Arbery for several minutes around the neighborhood in Brunswick while in their truck before they ultimately block him in. The McMichaels suspected that Arbery was responsible for a string of break-ins in the neighborhood, although they had zero proof of that claim. Brian, who also pursued Arbery in his vehicle, blocked Arbery with his truck from behind as the McMichaels circled around the block and stopped in front of the vehicles. Travis McMichael then gets out of the truck armed with a shotgun. A scuffle breaks out, and Travis McMichaels ends up shooting Ahmaud Arbery three times. Arbery was unarmed and died at the scene. Now, at the preliminary hearing, there was testimony that Brian told police he heard Travis McMichael yell effin' N-word after shooting Arbery and while standing over his body. Additionally, Travis McMichael used racial epithets numerous times over text messages and social media. He allegedly said he wished somebody would blow that effin' N's head off. We don't need to say what it is because we all know what it meant. That, my friends, is where the federal hate crime statute comes in. And the question now will become, will the feds let the state pursue the murder charges and then come get these three individuals to pursue their case? Or will the state drop their case and let the feds handle it from here? Needless to say, I don't think these three individuals thought that that day where they were going to go be the neighborhood heroes, thought that they are going to wind up spending the rest of their lives in prison. And it's certainly looking that way. All right, before we continue on with the docket, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. And welcome back. Now, next on the docket, the judge in the Scott Peterson case grants the defense an additional 60 days for discovery for a potential retrial of the death penalty phase of his 2004 conviction for killing his wife and unborn son. 2004. Do most people even remember where they were in 2004? I do. That was 17 years ago. And Scott Peterson is still trying to say that he is innocent. That's right. 17 years after Peterson was convicted of killing his wife, Lacey, and their unborn son, a judge has allowed his attorney more time for discovery relating to issues connected to a possible retrial of the death penalty phase in his sentence. Now, Peterson, he's now 48 years old, and he appeared via Zoom call from the San Quentin State Prison, and there were some hearings that were held regarding his 2004 conviction. The judge granted 60 days to provide additional discovery, so his attorneys now have until June 28th to get a waiver for a retrial from the death penalty phase or a new jury, which comes after the California Supreme Court overturned Peterson's death sentence last year, citing problems with jury selection during his trial. As you may also recall, there's still a post-conviction relief matter that's pending, where his attorneys are still trying to get a new trial, stating that the court allowed a juror to remain when she was being less than candid about being the victim of a domestic violence assault. Certainly something that someone would remember. In that particular case, the juror stated that she forgot that she had sought a civil protection order in relation to a domestic violence type of issue. She said she forgot. I find that a little hard to believe. Let's see. You're a juror in a highly publicized case where when you're asked to be truthful and honest, you just happen to forget that you've had a similar type of situation, at least a DV. You were very eager to appear on the jury, and oh, by the way, you wrote a book. Color me skeptical, but I think that that is potential grounds for a new trial. We'll see if the court ultimately gets it. Now, in another twist, yes, the mistress of Scott Peterson says that she would testify if she had to. Little quiz here. Does anybody remember who the mistress was? Well, Amber Fry. And she states that she's willing to testify. I guess after 17 years, she's over Mr. Peterson. Probably realized that, well, he's not going to get out. But don't worry. There's other women that are out there that would more than happy to want to be in a relationship with Mr. Peterson. I don't get it. I'll never understand it. But it's true. That would be an interesting case if there was a retrial, because there's actually some interesting time issues about where Scott Peterson was at the time. We'll have to wait and see. I wouldn't hold my breath on getting a new trial. All right, next on the docket, a shooting case out of Chicago. Now, let me know, was this awful but lawful, or just simply unlawful? I tend to think when you watch the entire video that these officers will not face charges. However, in the political environment in which we now live, you simply never know. So the city of Chicago released body cam footage yesterday showing a police officer fatally shooting a gentleman by the name of Anthony Alvarez. He was 22 years old. Well, and he was, because he's no longer with us. In the video, two officers can be seen driving into the parking lot of a gas station, lights flashing. Mr. Alvarez in the parking lot begins running away, and the officers eventually chase him on foot down an alley and around a corner into a front yard in a residential neighborhood. Mr. Alvarez had a gun in his right hand. You can see it on the video, and you can see it on the door cam video, the Ring doorbell camera, where this all went down as well. One of the officers, identified as an Evan Solano, shouts, "Hey, drop the gun," before he fired five times. At the time he was shot, the slowed down video shows Mr. Alvarez had his back to the officers and was attempting to run. And you can see this on the video. Mr. Alvarez is wounded, and he's actually trying to text on his phone, and he says, "Why are you shooting me?" The officer responds, "You had a gun." So the video from the body cams and from the residential security camera appear to show that Mr. Alvarez was holding a cell phone in his left hand and a gun in his right. After he was shot, he dropped the gun, which fell several feet in front of him. You can actually see it in the video and a picture. It's kind of off to the stairs going up to the residence. Although the city is worried that there will be violence, I don't think that this is the case that people need to go and exercise their First Amendment about. Certainly, it's tragic that a young man was shot, but he was running from the police and had a gun. He may have been turned running away from the police officers at that time. The officers will more than likely be found to be justified, noting that they had seen the firearm, they warned him to drop it, and he did not. Now, others will say, he was running, what is the problem? Well, one can obviously turn around and shoot at the officers at any time. Right before Mr. Alvarez was shot, he is seen falling, running in the grass, and the officers were getting much closer. Even though he was running at that particular moment that he was shot, there's nothing to say that he could not have turned immediately and shot the officers as they came around the corner. We'll show you little snippets, but I can't put it up on YouTube. Why? Because YouTube has determined that all you adults, mature people, could be too traumatized by seeing what really takes place in life. And So we're going to put the entire video up on Patreon so all our Patreons can go check it out. If you're not a Patreon, please go join. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And once again, this goes into the, you just can't make this stuff up. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day is a woman by the name of Amy Wilhite. She's 39, and she pled guilty to a felony indictment charging her with delivery or concealment of a weapon, a small .22 caliber revolver that was fully loaded with five rounds when it was covered. Ms. Wilhite pled guilty to a felony indictment charging her with delivery or concealment of a weapon, a small .22 caliber revolver that was fully loaded with five rounds when they found it. Now, the question really becomes, how did they find it? Well, Ms. Wilhite was charged because she had smuggled the firearm into the Missouri Department of Corrections. That's right, in prison. What normally takes place when you go to prison? Well, they pat you down. They do kind of a full body check, you know? If you've ever seen it, not the most pleasant thing, but they basically tell everybody to bend over and pull their cheeks apart. And the ladies, kind of the same thing, just more of a frontal view. Well, the police never found it. That's right, because Miss Wilhite had hid her little revolver in her intimate parts. Wilhite had been in the lockup for 17 days before jailers had discovered the gun, which was wrapped in plastic among her possessions. Now, Miss Wilhite originally denied knowing anything about the gun, then stated that she was simply holding it for another inmate, but ultimately the truth came out, and well, now Miss Wilhite has the distinct honor of being our dumb criminal conviction of the day because, well, first of all, she put the little .22 into her intimate parts, got it into jail, and then pled guilty to it. You would think that somebody would want to actually sell that, and it would have been huge value in custody on the black market, which exists in prisons. So I'm not exactly sure what she was doing, but you can see from the gun, it looks like it has some sharp objects on the end of that little firearm, and I'm not exactly sure why she would do that. Anyway, Ms. Wilhite, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Thanks for watching. Please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and even TikTok. All right. Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.